Ki Jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We're reading from the third canto, chapter 4. Vidura approaches Maitreya. We're in text 26. Uddhava uvacha. Nanu te tattva samradhya. Rishi koshara vontike. Sakshad bhagavata dishto. Martya lokam jihasata. Uddhava uvacha. Nanute tattva samradhya. Rishi koshara vontike. Sakshad bhagavata adisho. Martya lokam jihasata.
Sakshat Bhagavata Adishto.
Uddhava Uvacha.
Uddhava said.
Nanu.
However.
Te.
Of yourself.
Tattva Samradhya. One who is worshipable for reception of transcendental knowledge.
Rishi,
learned scholar.
Kosharava,
unto the son of Kusharu, Maitreya.
Antike,
staying nearby.
Sakshat,
directly.
Bhagavata,
by the personality of Godhead.
Adishta,
instructed.
Martyalokam,
mortal world.
Jihasata,
while quitting. Sri Uddhava said, you may take lessons from the great learned sage Maitreya, who is nearby, and who is worshipable for reception of transcendental knowledge. He was directly instructed by the personality of Godhead while he was about to quit this mortal world. We can read it together. Sri Uddhava said, you may take lessons from the great learned sage, Maitreya, who is nearby and who is worshipable for reception of transcendental knowledge. He was directly instructed by the personality of Godhead while he was about to quit this mortal world. This sentence is a little puzzling. Who is worshipable for reception of transcendental knowledge? What does that mean? He's worshipable because he has received transcendental knowledge? We're worshiping him because he's received transcendental knowledge. Oh, and another way is you can receive transcendental knowledge by worshiping him. That's what Pundarika Vidyanidhi sees in there. Yeah, that's why I was puzzled as I read it. Just now when I read it, it's like, what does that mean? In the Sanskrit, go back to the word-for-word translation. Where was that? Tattva Samradhya, one who is worshipable for reception of transcendental knowledge. Tattva Samradhya. Samradhya. That's Aradhya means to worship. Aradhya, Samradhya. All right, anyway. He's got transcendental knowledge. You can gain from this. Uddhava is telling him. And then this is kind of puzzling. From the great learned sage Maitreya, who is nearby, and who is, okay, nearby. Anybody know where Maitreya was?
Krishna was speaking to both of them, but he was speaking directly to Uddhava when Maitreya was there.
Yes, Maitreya was listening in. Where are they now? Yeah. Right now, they're in Vrindavan. Is it Mathura where they meet? I think it does, yeah. It's in the beginning of when they meet. And Prabhupada gives these beautiful purports about Vrindavan is, there are devotees there who go there just to miss Krishna. And in missing Krishna, they find him. And he says they never really find him, because once you find him, you're finished. And he says that's the beautiful thing, is you're always, always searching for Krishna. And he gives the example of the Goswamis, and I think he quotes that prayer from the Goswami Astakam, Hey Radhe, Rajade, Dike, Chalalite, Hey Nanda Suno Kutaha. So while wandering in Vrindavan, then he comes across Uddhava. They spend the whole night discussing things. And now, because Vidura wants to know more. Well, what did the Lord tell you as he was leaving the world? Uddhava says, for that you should go to Maitreya. So we'll read the purport. See, there's one more thing I was wondering about. Antike is staying nearby, but he's all the way in Haridwar, which is 200 miles, which by walking at a fast pace would be 200 miles. You walk about 20 miles a day if you're going really fast. So that's 10 days, 2 weeks. That's nearby. Keep that in mind as we're reading this. So purport, although one may be well-versed in the transcendental science, one should be careful about the offense of maryada vyatikrama, or impertinently surpassing a greater personality. According to scriptural injunction, one should be very careful of transgressing the law of maryada vyatikrama, because by so doing, one loses his duration of life, his opulence, fame, and piety, and the blessings of all the world. To be well-versed in the transcendental science necessitates awareness of the techniques of spiritual science. Uddhava, being well aware of all these technicalities of transcendental science, advised Vidura to approach Maitreya Rishi to receive transcendental knowledge. Vidura wanted to accept Uddhava as his spiritual master, but Uddhava did not accept the post because Vidura was as old as Uddhava's father, and therefore Uddhava could not accept him as his disciple, especially when Maitreya was present nearby. The rule is that in the presence of a higher personality, one should not be very eager to impart instructions, even if one is competent and well-versed. So Uddhava decided to send an elderly person like Vidura to Maitreya, another elderly person, but he was well-versed also because he was directly instructed by the Lord while he was about to quit this mortal world. Since both Uddhava and Maitreya were directly instructed by the Lord, both had the authority to become the spiritual master of Vidura or anyone else. But Maitreya, being elderly, had the first claim to becoming the spiritual master, especially for Vidura, who was much older than Uddhava. One should not be eager to become a spiritual master cheaply for the sake of profit and fame, but should become a spiritual master only for the service of the Lord. The Lord never tolerates the impertinence of maryada vyatikrama. Third time in the purport, he uses that same phrase. One should never pass over the honor due to an elderly spiritual master in the interests of one's own personal gain and fame. Impertinence on the part of the pseudo-spiritual master is very risky to progressive spiritual realization. The verse again. Sri Uddhava said, you may take lessons from the great learned sage Maitreya, who is nearby and who is worshipable for reception of transcendental knowledge. He was directly instructed by the personality of Godhead while he was about to quit this mortal world. So, in the purport, Prabhupada uses this phrase, maryada vyatikrama, three times. And I looked through the Vedabase to see, where is this coming from? Is it quoting something? This is the only place. And I went online just to search the whole world. And this is the only place where I could find that phrase. And it seems like he's quoting something, and he expects us to know it, but this is the only place I could find where he uses the phrase. Three times. From the very first sentence and to the almost at the very end. Although one may be well-versed in the transcendental science, one should be careful about the offense of maryada vyatikrama, or impertinently surpassing a greater personality. And the whole purport is about that. These are the rules. You may be well-versed in the transcendental science, but that necessitates an awareness of the techniques of spiritual science. Don't overstep your boundaries. So although this point is made here, Srimad Bhagavatam is full of exceptions, apparent exceptions to this. And that's the thing about dharma and showing respect. Maryada. Maryada means giving respect to others. And one name you've probably heard before is Maryada Purushottama, which is another name for Lord Ramachandra. So the two words put together, it's almost like an oxymoron. One who, Purushottama means the greatest person who is giving respect to everyone else as if he's the lowest person. It's Maryada Purushottama. It's like, what? It's like a paradox. And Lord Ram would give respect to everybody. And the reason is his senses were under control. One can put on a display of giving honor to others, but then when you're having a rough day, when you're hungry, when you're tired, these different emotions come over us. Physical needs, emotional needs, and then sometimes you just break and you're no longer Maryada. You want to be the Purushottama and push your way on whatever is going on around you. So that takes a bigness of your own self, of your own character, fullness, richness, in order to give respect to others in a genuine way. There's the saying about the tree that's full of fruit, branches hang low, but an empty tree, branches are way up there. So to consistently be able to give respect to others, and that's what our instruction is, come to that point. And by practicing that, and that's what it is, it's practice. We're not going to be 100% successful, but that's our practice. Just like shooting the basketball into the hoop. You practice all the time, every opportunity you get. So every opportunity, you practice giving maryada, giving respect, bowing down to people. Bhagavad Gita, the threefold tapasya given in chapter 17, austerity of the body is the first two lines, deva, dvija, guru, pragya. Anybody know the second line to that? But giving respects to the devas, the dvijas, the gurus, the pragyas, the respectable people. That's the austerity of the body, along with celibacy, cleanliness, simplicity. The next item is austerity of speech. Consists of speaking truthfully, beneficially, avoiding speech that offends, also reciting the Vedas regularly. Anudvega karam vakyam sakyam priyam hitam chayat svadhyaya vyasanam chayva vanmayam tapo uchyate. So practicing austerity of speech, this is another way of showing respect. Even if we don't feel like doing it, we still do it. Just like that movie that was taken way back in 1966 in New York, and Brahmananda's brother, Garga Muni, he was saying, well, should I bow down? What if I don't feel like bowing down? He's talking about that. And later on, he's talking about, he asked Prabhupada, should I bow down when I don't feel like it? And Prabhupada said, yes, you should bow down. And by practice, you'll come to feel like bowing down. It will become an automatic tendency. So Prabhupada is creating this whole culture out of thin air here in America. It's amazing how he's done this. We have some systems of showing respect to others. And these have come about by habit, by culture, just by being around it and observing it. And if we do something wrong, it feels wrong. Even if you don't know the technology, like why that's wrong, if you didn't read the book on etiquette, It just feels wrong when you say something wrong to someone. So Prabhupada is creating this culture of devotees. Some of us, some will learn the right way to do it. And we'll be around them, and like, I feel really peaceful around this person. And we will start to imbibe whatever they are doing. That's culture. Raghupati said when he came to the temple in New York for the first time, devotees were really nice to him. And so he thought, well, that's nice. I'm going to come back again. And again, a different group of devotees came to him, and they were nice to him. Three times, every time he visited, different devotees came to him. They were nice to him. Then when he moved in, nobody sat him down and said, you know, when people come, you have to be nice to them. Nobody ever gave him that talk. He just absorbed it by being around the devotees. And he said, and Raghupati's really good at explaining things in a really simple way. He said, this is culture. Nobody's telling you this. You just absorb it by osmosis. Osmosis, which rhymes with samosas. And so, now here we have Uddhava, who is this super brilliant, I'll find that sentence again. To be well-versed in the transcendental science necessitates awareness of the techniques of spiritual science. Uddhava, being well aware of all these technicalities of transcendental science, advised Vidura to approach Maitreya Rishi to receive transcendental knowledge. So Uddhava is well aware of all the technicalities. He is so aware of things. He was the advisor to Krishna. I mean, he didn't want to be, but Krishna would come to him and say, well, here's the situation. What do you think we should do? And Uddhava would first just offer all kinds of prayers and respect. And like, you're acting as if I know something you don't know. You're the supreme knower. All knowledge comes from you. He would just go on and on and on. And Krishna would just wait patiently. And then Uddhava would say, you know, he'd give his advice. And Krishna would say, that's really good advice. And it would be good advice. He's brilliant. He knows what is what, which is a phrase Prabhupada uses several times in the, we just finished reading Bhagavad Gita, the discussions about the three modes of nature. One who is in sattva-gun, they know what is what. He uses that several times. And then he says, those in the mode of passion, they don't know what is what. Those in the mode of ignorance, they don't know what is what. But Uddhava knows what is what. He knows how to do these things. Alright, and so the beginning of this purport, Prabhupada gives this quotation, and let's see if any of you know where it is, where it's coming from. According to scriptural injunction, okay, so he's invoking the Shastra. He's not just coming up with this. According to scriptural injunction, one should be very careful of transgressing the law of Maryada Vyatikrama, because by so doing, one loses his duration of life, his opulence, fame, and piety, and the blessings of all the world. Anybody know where that's from? Nope. No, he mentions the same list in other places, and it is from a verse. Sometimes he'll quote the verse. But, okay, I'm going to bring out the verse. Here it is, 10th canto, part 1, chapter 4. It's the very last verse. I'll recite the verse, and then I'll talk about a few of the things that lead up to it. And it's like such a heavy thing, like why is he equating this verse to this situation? All right, here's the verse. Ayu Shriyam Yasho Dharmam. So you recognize that? Ayu, your duration of life. Shriyam is beauty, but in this purport, he translates it as opulence. Ayu Shriyam Yasho Dharmam. So your fame, your dharma, religion. Lokana Shisha Evacha. Lokan, elevation to higher planets. Ashisha, blessings. Hanti Shayamsi Sarvani Pungso Mahad Atikrama. So it's almost Maryada Yatikrama, but it's Pungso Mahad Atikrama. My dear King, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. Can anybody know what we're talking about here in the fourth chapter of the 10th canto? No, this is actually Shukadeva Goswami giving his commentary on what's going on. It is right after Kamsa attempts to kill Subhadra. She flies up in the air. She shows her form as Durga. He's impressed. He says, "Oh my gosh, I'm such a fool. I've killed all of your babies." And he takes them out of their shackles. And then he starts preaching to them about, you know, things happen sometimes, you know, and he speaks some really nice philosophy. And then I'm going to go back and we'll read this. I think it's a good day for reading stuff like this. It sounds almost biblical how that the story of Kamsa begged, "My dear sister and brother-in-law, please be merciful to such a poor-hearted person as me. Since both of you are saintly persons, please excuse my atrocities." Having said this, Kamsa fell at the feet of Vasudeva and Devaki, his eyes full of tears of regret. When Devaki saw her brother actually repentant while explaining ordained events, she was relieved of all anger. Similarly, Vasudeva was also free from anger. Smiling, he spoke to Kamsa as follows. And then they have this philosophy discussion there in the jail cell where Kamsa had killed all of their sons. And it's, everybody's just, wow, he's turned around. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus, having been addressed in purity by Devaki and Vasudeva, who were very much appeased, Kamsa felt pleased, and with their permission, he entered his home. After that night passed, Kamsa summoned his ministers and informed them of all that had been spoken by Yogamaya, who had revealed that he who was to slay Kamsa had already been born somewhere else. After hearing their master's statement, the envious Asuras, who were enemies of the demigods and were not very expert in their dealings, advised Kamsa as follows." Okay, so they're not very expert. They have some really dumb ideas. That's the mode of ignorance. Adharmam, dharmam ittiya. They'll take adharma to be dharma, and dharma to be adharma. Adharmam, dharmam ittiya. Manyate tamasavrita. Sarvartam viparitam cha. So sarvartan, in all situations, viparitamscha, they're going to go the wrong direction. Somehow they have this innate, in the mode of passion it says, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. In the mode of goodness, one knows what should be done, what should not be done, what should be feared, what should not be feared. what should be embraced, what should be rejected. But somehow in the mode of ignorance, one has this idea and they just go straight to the wrong thing. And so, the demons were not very expert in their dealings, advised Kamsa as follows. If this is so, O king of the Bhoja dynasty, beginning today, we shall kill all the children born in all the villages, towns, and pasturing grounds within the past 10 days or slightly more. What a great idea. The demigods always fear the sound of your bowstring. They are constantly in anxiety, afraid of fighting. Therefore, what can they do by their endeavors to harm you? And then they go on telling Kamsa what a great fighter he is and how you're able to fight the demigods. So we'll go out and do this. We've got no fear. Nonetheless, because of their enmity, our opinion is that the demigods should not be neglected. Therefore, to uproot them completely, engage us in fighting with them, for we are ready to follow you. As a disease, if initially neglected, becomes acute and impossible to cure, or as the senses, if not controlled at first, are impossible to control later, an enemy, if neglected in the beginning, later becomes insurmountable. So here's another example. Demons, they know all of this stuff, but they're still doing dumb things. Had a conversation with a teacher once about the smartest kids do the dumbest things. I was going off to visit someone that was in jail, and I mentioned it to him, and he said, yeah, smart kid, doing dumb things. And so you can be brilliant, but you can still do dumb things. And so that's what culture is about. We develop good habits through culture, through being around good people. Okay, continuing on. The foundation of all the demigods, and here's Kamsa. He had made this turnaround. He was genuinely sorry to Vasudeva and Devaki. Now, with his ministers, his mind had been turned. That's a good idea. Yeah, let's do that. The foundation of all the demigods is Lord Vishnu, who lives and is worshipped wherever there are religious principles, traditional culture, the Vedas, cows, Brahmins, austerities, and sacrifices with proper remuneration. Okay, the foundation of all the demigods is Lord Vishnu, and he lives in these places. So let's go to these places and destroy all of them. O king, we who are your adherents in all respects shall therefore kill the Vedic Brahmins, the persons engaged in offering sacrifices and austerities, and the cows that supply milk from which clarified butter is obtained for the ingredients of sacrifice. The Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu, and they are the paraphernalia for a godly civilization. Lord Vishnu, the Supersoul, within the core of everyone's heart, is the ultimate enemy of the Asuras, and is therefore known as Asura Dwit. He is the leader of all the demigods, because all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, exist under his protection. The great saintly persons, sages, and Vaishnavas also depend upon him. To persecute the Vaishnavas, therefore, is the only way to kill Vishnu. Jai. So why is he doing this? It's like in his personal interests. In Rajagun, the mode of passion, one works for their interests. They just want to do things to increase their prestige in society, or things that they possess, or in order to get sense gratification. In the mode of goodness, your determination is, I'm doing this because it ought to be done. This is the right thing to do. But in the mode of ignorance, somehow, Everything they do does not benefit them or anyone else. Actions performed without consideration of future bondage, future punishment, problems, without concern for violence caused to others or inconvenience caused to others, that's action in the mode of ignorance. So Kamsa has this idea, there's this baby that's going to kill me, so I want to kill that baby first. So his ministers are saying, well, let's just kill all the babies. What a brilliant idea. So here's what Shukadeva Goswami has to say. After saying all of that, Shuka Uvacha, Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus, having considered the instructions of his bad ministers, Durmantrivi, Kamsa, who was bound by the laws of Yamaraj and devoid of good intelligence because he was a demon, decided to persecute the saintly persons, the Brahmins, as the only way to achieve his own good fortune. It's a nice little purport there. I might come back to it. These demons, the followers of Kamsa, were expert at persecuting others, especially the Vaishnavas, and could assume any form they desired. After giving these demons permission to go everywhere and persecute the saintly persons, Kamsa entered his palace. Surcharged with passion and ignorance, and not knowing what was good or bad for them, the Asuras, for whom impending death was waiting, began the persecution of the saintly persons. And then the verse under discussion. My dear King, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. So Prabhupada pulls this out of this horrible, evil, awful story and then puts it in here, saying, if you instruct someone older than you, you're just like this. You're performing maryada vyatikrama. And all of these things will happen to you. Ayu, your duration of life, shriyam, beauty, yasha, fame, dharmam, religion, lokan ashisha evacha. Elevation to higher planets is the way it's translated here. In the other place, Prabhupada translates that as the blessings of people in general. Hantisha yangsi sarvani pungso mahada tibhrama. Alright, so we could be so frightened of this. How can I instruct anyone at all then? If you're young and like, wow, I don't want all these things to happen to me. And you could go to that extreme also. So we need some kind of balance here. So let's, where's that going to come from? We can take this to extremes and stifle all our progress. At some point, you are going to be the oldest and most experienced. So what was going on here? They just had this long spiritual discussion talking about Krishna. And what was the difference? Now that he's asked this question, Uddhava's like, I'm not, you better go to Maitreya, who's 200 miles away. And he will answer that question. What's the difference between how they were discussing before? They were discussing before as friends. There is there are different types of discussions. The first one, the most pure, is samvad, where someone is clearly an authority. They are speaking, and the other person is listening. Samvad, like we hear the Ramananda Samvad, sometimes Prabhupada uses that term, when Ramananda Roy is speaking to Lord Chaitanya. This is like, why is he not afraid of Maryada Vyatikrama? Here's Lord Chaitanya, who is begging him, you tell me, here's my question, what's your answer? I want to hear from you. So it was his, he was accepting an order, and he was humbly like, and trying to resist. But Lord Chaitanya pushed him. So then it became the Ramananda Samvad. Lord Chaitanya is asking questions, Ramananda is speaking. He's the authority. It's not a discussion. You're the authority. Tell me. I want to know. What are some of the questions he asks? What is fame? If one is famous as a devotee, that is real fame. Anybody remember any of the other questions Lord Chaitanya asked? Well, there are two big questions. What is the sadhya and what is the sadhana? Sadhya means the goal of life. What is the goal of life? And what is the means for achieving it? So Ramananda Roy was speaking different things, but at that point Lord Chaitanya was saying, I don't know, I think you can say something better. What else do you have? Tell me more. Let's go further. So Maryada Vyatikrama. So then that's a samvad. Then just a vada, a discussion between equals, where kind of like what I'm doing here. I'll bring up something and then, what do you think of this? I'm not the authority. We're all equals here. We're reading something and we're trying to figure it out. And then the next stage is argument. No, it clearly means this. When he says, Maitreya is worshipable for reception of transcendental knowledge, Pundarik says this, it means this, and I'm saying no, it means this. And then we get into a big argument. Well, not really an argument, but there's a strong disagreement. The next stage is where we just start arguing. We're no longer hearing each other. And then the further degradation is we're arguing, we don't even care about the argument, we hate each other, we're trying to make each other look foolish. I will take my opponent's side and say, this is what you're trying to say, but you're just too dull to say it right. This is what you meant to say. And we're just bashing each other's character. So anyway, the highest form is samvad. Someone is clearly an authority. And that's what Uddhava is reluctant to do with Vidura. Vidura is also an authority. He's advising his brother, giving advice to Dhritarashtra. He was seen clearly as a sadhu, as one who knows what is what. But he's also much older than Uddhava. So when Vidura asked that question, what did you hear from Krishna? What is the subject matter? I would like to hear that. Uddhava said, this is getting too deep. That would mean I'm becoming your teacher. Maitreya was also there. He heard the same discussion. Why don't you go there and hear from him? And so he does go there. And later on, in the 11th canto, we read about what Krishna spoke to Uddhava. And Vidura is speaking. He's not directly relating to that conversation. Maitreya teaches him a lot of things. He's answering Vidura's questions. But Vidura does not... I don't remember Vidura ever asking directly that question. You were sitting there with Krishna. What did he say? What were the instructions that he gave? Rather, he starts off with some other roundabout questions, and there's a lot of tension built up in the purports where Prabhupada is saying, Maitreya is not as good as Uddhava. Is this going to be worth listening to? Vidura is starting off with some simple questions just to get Maitreya warmed up. But as soon as Maitreya starts speaking, it's like, oh yeah, this is really good. This is going to be good. I'm going to keep reading. So he goes through the third canto. Let's see, does that discussion go into fourth canto also? Maitreya and Vidura? fourth canto, how far do they go in there? Where do they leave off? I think it's after the King Prithvi story.
Keep I'm not sure exactly.
After Prithvi's. Yep, yep, yep. I remember when I went through it, it was like, this ends Maitreya's section, and I'm going to remember this forever, but I remembered it for about 10 minutes. And, okay, anyway, Uddhava passed it on. And so we don't hear much from Uddhava again until the 10th canto. Well, the 11th, the 10th canto, yes. And then the 11th canto. So let's see, what else do I have here? Oh, yeah. So in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, talking about the spiritual realm, talking about the upside-down banyan tree and how to get out of it. And then Krishna speaks this verse, Nirmana moha jita sangha dosha adhyatma nitya vinavritta kama vanvara vimukta sukha dukha sanya gacchantya mudha paramavyayam tat. So, nirmana, becoming free from the desire to. Mana means respect. So becoming like you're just not interested in people respecting you. Nirmana moha jita sangha dosha. And jita means you've conquered over this moha, this illusion of wanting to be respected. Nirmana moha jita sangha dosha adhyatma nitya vinavritta kama. All of your desires, your kama have been conquered over. Dvanvaya vimukta sukha dukha sanya. You've risen above the duality of happiness and distress. Gacchantya mudha paramavyayam tat. So these people who are not mudhas, they paramavyayam tat, they can reach this highest place. And that's implied here, to be well-versed in the transcendental science necessitates awareness of the techniques of spiritual science. And let's see, further down in the purport. One should not be eager to become a spiritual master cheaply for the sake of profit and fame, but should become a spiritual master only for the service of the Lord. The Lord never tolerates the impertinence of maryada vyatikrama. One should never pass over the honor due to an elderly spiritual master in the interests of one's own personal gain and fame. So, to become a spiritual master, Lord Chaitanya has asked everyone to become, anyone that's reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, anyone that's come in contact with him. He says, become a guru, on my order, Amara Gyaya Guru Parahanidesh. There must be somebody, well, first of all, we have to accept a guru, and there must be somebody that knows more than me, somebody that's further down the path than I am, and we have to hold on to that person and take instruction from them. And then by their help, someone's going to come along, and we're going to be a little further along than them, and we try to help them. It doesn't have to be a big thing with name and fame and accepting donations. If we're doing it for that, that is what's being talked about here. But every one of us, Prabhupada wants every one of us to take on someone, to try to help somebody. And we can take something like this and take it to the extreme and, no, I'm not going to instruct anybody. There are risks in instructing anyone, and that's why so many times it's said the guru is so merciful, because when you go and instruct people, initially people may be grateful to you. And of the three kinds of gurus, there's never any, no one ever gets angry at someone for being the Vartna Pradarshaka guru, the one who introduces someone to the path. That's the easiest one. You introduce someone to it and then just walk away. Like, you're always going to be respected, everyone's going to be happy with you. But when you take on the responsibility and the time to instruct people bit by bit, and you have the patience to sit there and help them get through these things, help them get through their misconceptions, and once in a while you gotta like tell them you're doing it wrong, and that's hard to do for some people. Some people really enjoy telling people you're doing it wrong, but for a devotee it's difficult. We don't like to do that. So yeah, when you're instructing people and then they're going and they're doing something wrong, and then somebody goes up to them and asks, where'd you learn how to do that? And they say, oh, from that guy over there. And it's like, oh no, they're pointing to me, and like, what have I done? When you teach someone, it's in a sense you are responsible for what they do, in a good way, and it can be a good way, and sometimes in a not good way. We were just listening yesterday, Prabhupada was saying, the representative of a company, he may be just a representative, not highly placed, but when he gives his signature on the document for the purchase order, that company is now responsible for, because of his signature. So in the same way, the spiritual master is responsible to Krishna. He is the direct representative of Krishna in that way. Even though, see, he went on with that, this person may be just an employee, just a peon in the company. And he signs that little slip. Yes, I've received these things. Here you go. Then if the company says, where's the things? I got the slip, got his signature. And oh, that guy, yeah, okay. It must be here somewhere. So, it is a big deal. And it is something that we've all been asked to do. And Prabhupada's saying, don't make it a big deal. Just go out, whatever you know, teach it to others. He's been saying that since way early on. 1966, he was telling devotees that. Brand new, fresh devotees, just a few weeks in. Still holds true. And let's see. Any other notes? Wow, we're almost out of time. All right. And sometimes it's not always clear what is the right thing to do. Dharma samudha chetasa. Arjun wanted to do what was right. It looks like maryada vyatikrama. I'm going to go and fight against my guru and my grandfather. This is definitely maryada vyatikrama. I'm offending a great soul. And so he says, so he surrenders to Krishna and says, dharma samudha chitaha. I'm bewildered about what my dharma is. Pichchami tam dharma samudha chitaha yachshayasa nishchitan bruhitanmi shishyasteham sadhimam tvam prapanam. Says, I bow down to you, I surrender to you, I'll do whatever you say. And then the next verse he says, but Govinda, I will not fight. So he's still stating, I still have this doubt, I'm not going to fight. It's interesting how I'm surrendering to you, the next verse, I'm not going to fight though. Clear up the Dharma Samudha Chetasa. My consciousness, I don't know what to do here. This is going against all my reflexes. So there may be some point where the junior has to instruct the senior. I know of devotee Vaisheshika. His mother was on her deathbed, and she had started listening to his lectures, and she started chanting, and she said, aren't I supposed to get a spiritual name? And so he initiated his mother and told her, you know, chant like whatever. She could only chant like four rounds a day or something because like she just had no strength. I think Indradyumna Swami did something like that too. Initiated his mother or his father. So that's not normal, but it's a special situation. Okay, Mom, here's your spiritual name. I forgot what name you gave her. And so, sometimes we just have to work with what's there. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of unique situations. Prahlad was there in front of Lord Nrsingadev. All the demigods were there offering prayers to Lord Nrsingadev, trying to appease him. And he was still angry, and Brahma said, Prahlad, you go, he came for you, go, you talk to him. And then Prahlad begins his prayers by saying, who am I? These are all great demigods who are infused with sattva-gun, purity. They're godly people. They're much older than me. They're going to live longer than I will. I'm surpassed in all ways. Why should I speak? And then he goes on, he says, because I have devotion for you. That's the only thing I have. Someone may have, and he gives a list of all kinds of blessings that one may have. Long life, austerity, wealth, birth in a high family. I don't have any of those. I was born in a family of demons. Why? I don't have any qualifications to appease the Lord with my prayers, except I have some devotion. He offered his prayers. Lord Nrsingadev was happy, put his hand on his head and said, I'm really happy. I really like your prayers. So Bhagavatam is full of these different situations. Okay, we got 5 minutes. Are there any questions? Anything anybody want to bring up? Yes.
How do you react when people start praising you?
How do I react? I feel really good.
You feel what?
I feel really good.
But how do you respond then?
How do what?
You respond.
How do I respond? It depends on the situation. One time, I was playing my guitar at a little home gathering, and it was a lot of people that weren't devotees that were there, and somebody came and said, I really like your guitar playing, you're really good. And I said, well, there's a lot of people that are better than me, you know, I don't practice that much. And finally she just said, you know, you just need to learn how to accept a compliment. And I thought, that's right, yeah, okay. Because when someone gives you a compliment, it's like a gift. And if you accept it and say, thank you, then it's complete. They feel good, and you feel good, and it's natural. And you could just say, well, I'm glad you like it. I really enjoy doing this. And that's how I usually respond to things like that. That was a life lesson learned maybe 20 years ago, that learn to accept a compliment and appreciate it because it's a gift. And like, oh, look what you gave me. Thank you. That was nice of you. And then you could throw something back at them. And, you know, I like how you did that a few minutes ago or something.
So I'll turn my question around now. How do you don't get into pride when people compliment you?
Yeah, how not to get into pride when people, yeah. If someone does give me a compliment, it's probably because of something I've read or spoken, and I would just say, yes, it's brilliant, this is wonderful, and I just focus on what has been said and what it was and how beautiful it is and where it came from, and try not to get too carried away. That's what I do. I try not to, yeah. But then, also, we want to take pride in what we do. We want to act in a way that, because there is a healthy kind of pride. We can take pride in doing things. Okay, I'm going to be doing this. I better make sure it's going to be a good one. So that's a healthy kind of pride. But the swollen head kind of pride, arrogance, pride, anger, conceit, harshness, ignorance, these are the qualities that the demons have. But a devotee is proud of, like, wow, we got these beautiful books, and I'm just really proud to say, look what Prabhupada said here. This is so cool. And when I talk to people that are entirely new to this, or not even knowing what this is, and I say things and people say, wow, that's amazing, that's wonderful. And I just agree with them. Yeah, it's amazing. It's not coming from me. I was talking with Satchinandan Swami once. We were on a little walk together. And I said, I take a lot of the things that you say and I speak them to new people. And the people really appreciate them. And I just wanted to let you know that I'm using your things. And he laughed and he said, yes, we are all merchants of secondhand things. We are just like, and he put his hands like this, like a pipe, what do you call it? A pipe flow? And I said, a pipeline. He said, yes, a pipe. You know, it comes in this end and you just pass it out the other. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. And the more it flows through you, and the more you hang on to it, you're restricting that pipe flow, the flowing through the pipe. And you know, when you're on book distribution, as soon as you think, now I know how to do this, everything stops. When you put yourself out there and you're just thinking, all right, Krishna, I don't know what I'm doing. I've got no idea who's going to take a book. I'm holding this book, and I'm just going to turn around, and the first person I see, the closest one to me, I'm going to approach him, and then, Krishna, you're doing this. You're putting the words in my mouth, and we've all got experience of that. And we're like just watching our mouth move. The person takes a book, says, I want more, and they walk away with a big stack. And then I'm thinking, all right, Krishna, you're doing this, you're doing this. And then as soon as they walk away, it's like, now I know how to do this. The rest of the day is going to be really good. And then... and it's over. It's like, how do you stay like that? And people like Prabhupada, or sometimes you're out with other distributors and like, wow, they're there all the time.
It's amazing because Lord Chaitanya's hands are just like
that. Yep. Well, here he's just like this, but sometimes, yeah. Well, yeah, the murti that Prabhupada gave to the Gaudiya Math in Mathura, isn't it? It was like this. Okay.
You in the beginning you said there are many exceptions in the Bhagavatam of this senior speaking to a junior.
Apparent exceptions, yes.
And was the Ramananda Roy one that you cited?
Well, that's from Chaitanya Charitamrita, yeah.
Okay, so what's one from what's from the Bhagavatam, one of them?
Another one would be Durvasa Muni and Ambarish. There's just so many incidents where someone who would normally be like the higher position in society, but because the other person has more bhakti, they're actually more elevated. Even though Durvasa Muni is superior in all ways, you know, with experience and age and learning, but Ambarish, he's a king. He's just a devotee. But he had the power over the Sudarshan Chakra. We could probably come up with a few more. Is that what you have as one example? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Shukadeva Goswami, yeah. Sitting out there. His father's there. His father's guru is there. Yes. So that's another example of Maryada Vyatikrama. Balaram visiting Ramaharshansutta, who didn't stand up to greet him. But Balaram appeared to be a Kshatriya and younger. Ramaharshan was like, hey, I'm on the Vyasasan, they've installed me, they did this whole ceremony to install me, I'm supposed to sit here until the thing is done. But he should have stood up. That was a mistake. That sure cut off his duration of life. Ayu, Shriya, Yasha, and now he's famous. Yasha, Dharma, Mokan, Ashishya, Evacha, Hanti, Shriyangshi, Sarvani, Fungso, Maha, Atikrama.
Said that, oh, now, even though you're the son, you're the spiritual master of your
Oh,
father.
Right, yeah, yeah. Mukunda and?
Raghunandan.
Raghunandan. And which was the son?
Yeah, Raghunandan was the son of Mukunda, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Mukunda, so you are the father and Raghunandan is the son? Or Raghunandan is the father and you're the son? And Mukunda said, yes, I accept him as my father. And then Lord Chaitanya gave a nice, very nice one-line thing. He said, Jaha Halite Krishna Bhakti Se Guru Hoy. He says, wherever you get Krishna Bhakti from, he's guru. So Mukunda was feeling that he got some Krishna Bhakti from his son. So.
Oh, boy. Wherever you get Krishna Bhakti from, that's your guru.
I was going to mention something. You also mentioned that Buddha was sometimes gave advice, like instruction to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. So I think there was maybe some other politics, maybe. I mean, but Buddha, because Vidura was the advisor to the gurus, you know, and Buddha has a similar kind of position with the Yadavas.
No? Oh, whoa, didn't think of that one. But Vidura is pure-hearted, and he was never really accepted as an advisor to the Kauravas. He may have advised them, but they weren't listening. All right, well, that's a good one to end with. Oh, man, that was just such a good conclusion. Whoever gives you bhakti is a guru, but yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. It's Christmas. We can just sit around and talk all day.
I was wondering if you could explain what is what.
That's what all I've been talking about the whole time. Yeah, such a curious phrase. What is what? What is what?
Thank you for your very thoughtful class. The example you give of Vaisheshika, you know, initiating his mother, you said these are exceptions, but or how do you say in our society most of the children who came to Krishna consciousness are now facing their parents' death, and they're trying to instruct them last minute, you know, to give them something. I mean, I had the same thing. I was brought up a Hindu, but when my mother passing away, my sisters and brother called me there to give her some knowledge. And all I did was chanting Hare Krishna for, you know, I read the Bhagavad Gita. But isn't this a situation that more and more devotees are trying to preach to their parents, and where they're, you know, the parents are older, but, you know, we're trying to give them some kind of whatever we have acquired in our life, or realization. So it's not more, it's more like the norm instead of exceptions in the devotee's life now, isn't it? Most devotees.
Seems like, yeah, it's coming on. Yeah, thank you.
I mean, I don't know, I just the other day, I just heard somebody also was asking me, you know, what do I do? My mother's passing away. What do I do? I know you had the same experience. So it seemed like, you know, we're taking the position of instructing, you know, of parents.
Yeah, it feels so weird to preach to your parents. But if they want to know something, it's kind of up to them. Vaisheshika and Nirkola were just taken care of. I forget if it was both parents or just the mother. But both parents had been atheists the whole time. They had no interest in anything spiritual. But then toward the end, there was this big change, and they were just going with it and serving, and they weren't really expecting that. It was the same with Indrajimna Swami. I remember some story. I haven't heard it in a long time. Anybody remember anything about his mother or his both parents?
Yeah. Somehow he sent her books all the time,
and they all ended up in the garage. But when she was near the end, she got those books out and started reading, and then she started
asking, you know, for the...
Well, she had been listening to his lectures. And that was back in the days when to listen to a lecture meant you had to buy a cassette tape. And, it wasn't like just clicking on something online.
Did you probably say something along the line that you would risk your appearance or your appearance would go back to God because
you
could
go back to God? Yes. In several places he said things like that. Yeah. Irmala, she had just recently joined the Chicago Temple. Prabhupada came to visit. She brought her father to come and see Prabhupada. And he was very respectful and really appreciated Prabhupada. And he asked, I'm Jewish. Is it okay for me to come to this temple? And Prabhupada said, yeah. And he said, but I'm just coming to see my daughter. Prabhupada said, that is all right. You are loving your daughter, and your daughter is loving Krishna. So therefore, two things that are equal to each other are something, how do you say that? Are the same thing, are equal to the same thing. So because you're loving your daughter, who is loving Krishna, therefore, your visit to the temple is as good as anybody else's.
I just heard recently, somebody must have said in class, that somebody went to their mother's grave, and the hospital or something.
And the mother said, where's your Krishna now?
Yeah, Prabhupada, yeah. There was some story that a devotee told Prabhupada. Yeah, back in the early days, it was like really unusual for parents to get interested because we were just so different. But a few did. Kritakarma, there was a pujari in Berkeley, he's from Cuba. Anybody know him? Yeah, really, really wonderful devotee. Everybody loved him. Devotee, people would come to the temple just to, like, where's that guy? The guy that's on the altar, because everybody loved him. But his mother was dying. He went to Cuba, and he was there as she was dying. And when he came back, he said, the first couple days, he was like being really quiet and chanting quietly. Usually, he would just pace back and forth in the temple, chanting furiously, chanting on his beads. And then after a couple days, he just thought, I am who I am. I'm going to do what I do. And he just started chanting and being himself. And everybody just stood back and like, wow. And they respected him more for that. And his mother respected him. And she was asking him, tell me more about Krishna. She wanted to hear from him. So by being himself, he came in trying to be polite and go with what was going on. But after a while, he couldn't help it. Like some of us, you know, we can't help it after being a devotee all these years. And we try to have a normal conversation, but we can't help turning it around.
It's funny, I went to visit my sister in California, and they know that I usually chant for 2 hours.
So they live up in the mountains, so I thought I didn't want to interfere with their program. So I thought I'll go, you know, back and chant. And so she came early in the morning, and she said, don't you have to chant something for a couple hours? He said, we'll go out so you can have the whole house and you can chant. They respect, you know, if you put importance in what you have to do. And so I said, you don't have to go, I can chant here. He said, well, you mean we can listen? We can chant? I said, oh, yeah, yeah. So me and my husband, we chanted, and, you know, they sat there, they were looking at their paper, but they tolerated for 2 hours. So it's amazing that they reminded us that we had to chant, you know. And give us some space. So it does affect them in ways we cannot see sometimes.
Yes. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, keep jai. Srila Prabhupada, keep jai.